This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.
Broadcasting from deep in the heart of North America, five influential podcasters from coast to coast come together to discuss a variety of topics from around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Power Hour.
Welcome back to the Coast to Coast Power Hour. This is Michael Glenn Moore. I'm your host for tonight. Tonight we have five podcasters, including myself, and others that will be joining us later on. We're going to go ahead and start now since it's the top of the hour and we want to go ahead and get this show on the road. So what we're going to do first is go around the screen here, and everybody's going to tell us their name and their podcast. What about or their podcast? Some of us have more than one. So why don't we start off with William, World of Wally.
World of Wally. This is William Wally. Couldn't get too creative with the name. I had to get something I could remember for sure. Based out of Mississippi, southern part of the state. And like I said, been doing it for a little over a year. Got a chance to meet a lot of amazing people, including the group that is compiled here tonight. So. And you can catch me everywhere. I'm everywhere except Pandora, I was told. And I don't know what their problem is with me, but I'm moving on beyond that at this point. So,
yeah, I'm not sure if I'm on Pandora either. But you have to sign up for it, and I don't think I've ever done that. So I probably should look into that.
I think Pandora just hates me is what I think it is.
Michael, go ahead and tell us about yourself.
I'm Michael Spedden. I host Foul Players Radio. I'm based out of Maryland, and my podcast is about the history of entertainment and performing arts, mostly in the Mid-Atlantic region on the East Coast, but it has branched out to national, and I've had a lot of people from Los Angeles and California and Hollywood on as well. But really what the podcast purpose is to kind of create an oral history of performing artists, what their careers have been like, what it's been like, you know, from when they started to get to where, you know, they started having success. And I've really enjoyed it. I have everybody on here from belly dancers to bands to actors to comedians to people that were in management of entertainers, you know, the whole nine yards. So it's called Foul Players Radio, F-O-W-L, Foul Players Radio. And you can find me just wherever podcasts are heard.
Michael, last time we talked about you being in a commercial for J.G. Wentworth, and that's this time correct. Let's talk a little bit about your other acting job that you had that was pretty major, your appearance on Gotham.
Gotham, so what was that yes. About? That was almost 2 years. That was actually 2 years ago this week that aired on Fox. I was in season 5, episode 8 of Gotham, and I played a henchman to the Penguin, who was Oswald Cobblepot. On the show, if those of us that have not seen Gotham, it's basically it takes place during Bruce Wayne's adolescence before he really became Batman, but it talks about the rise of the criminals. I was brought on to be one of the Penguin's henchmen, and I had a scene with the Penguin and the Riddler, who was Ed Nygma, and with Mr. Penn, who ended up becoming the ventriloquist. And you could tell we were getting towards the end of the series, the last couple of episodes, because when I got shot and killed, I only died once. Most characters on that show that died about four times and came back somehow. And so I only died once. I only had the pleasure of dying once. And it was a great experience, though. I really enjoyed working with the folks over at Fox and with Warner Brothers and the people that wrote Gotham. I was treated just like family, even though I was just a minor character and only filming for 2 days. Just a wonderful time, and I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I enjoyed that show. It's a shame that it didn't last as long as it did. What was it, like 2 seasons and it was over?
It was five. It was actually five seasons. Well, actually 4 full seasons, and the 5th season was 11 episodes. So roughly 4.5 total. And it took, the last season was 11 of them. And I think that there actually were not plans to do that 5th season. So I was lucky that I ended up there anyhow. But yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Wonderful time, wonderful show, wonderful people to work for.
Yeah. Okay, Matt, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, my name's Matt Gwynn. I host The Adventures of the Albino Rhino. It's my adventure through the world of people, basically. I'll just talk to people. It's pretty simple. We don't complicate shit. There's no filter. There's no nothing. It's just me and some people sitting down and talking. I'm actually, Monday we release an episode I recorded with Don Smith yesterday, one of our other SJ Network peoples. So that was fun. That was a good time.
Yeah, you're a comedian.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why it's called The Adventures of the Albino Rhino? Because most people aren't going to realize that without saying.
The adventure part should be self-explanatory because I'm going on an adventure talking to people, you know. But the albino rhino thing is actually a direct nod to the fact that much like the majestic rhinoceros in the wonderful continent of Africa, we too are poached. The witch doctors in Tanzania and Malawi and a couple other countries happen to like consuming albino flesh and whatnot. It's an interesting, duality, I think, to what we experience here in the United States and other parts of the world. Just kind of proof, you know, shit gets weird everywhere.
I did not realize that. So there's cannibalism going on still today?
Sure. Yeah, apparently in Asia as well, too, I recently found out. A lot of it has to do with our quote-unquote horn, hence why I picked the rhino. Supposedly it's like a virility thing, you know? It's like, what is that? The blue football pill? Shit.
The one the Viagra?
Out. Yeah, that stuff. It's like the Viagra of the natural world, supposedly.
Don't ask me why I knew that immediately. I'm not taking Viagra, folks. It's
I was actually trying to think of Blue Chew because they seem to sponsor everybody's podcast that's a comedian but mine. It's like, come on. I'll eat it if you send it to me.
Okay, Brian, go ahead. Introduce yourself.
Bruce Starr?
Oh, Bruce, I'm sorry.
Okay, yes, my name is Bruce Starr. I'm the host of the 80s Golden Age of Comedy and had a great time on Matt's show. And also, Michael, he was being very modest when he didn't bring me up. I was the belly dancer that came on his show. I know. He didn't really want to talk too much about that. But it's been a great run. I've done over 24 shows with some of the great stand-ups from the 80s. I just did Murray Langston, the Unknown Comic, the other day.
Oh, sweet.
Cassie Ladman, Steve Bluestein, Bobby Collins, Bobby Slayton. Just incredible. And Tom Dreesen, many of you know, it's been incredible. And I was a personal appearance agent, during those days in the 80s. So I got to know them, as an agent. And this show has allowed me to learn more about them. I certainly didn't hardly know anything about them other than what they could do on stage. But this show has allowed me to learn all about their lives and their struggles. Just like what Michael said, he loves the idea of getting the history of performing artists and how they made it. And that's exactly what I do on my show with the comedians. And I'm loving every minute of it because each and every show is incredibly inspiring.
How often is your show released?
Well, I've been doing about two or three a week, but they don't get released at a certain day. It's whenever. See, what I do on the shows is when I speak to the comedians, and it usually runs anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, and people can find all the shows right now absolutely free. It might not be that way forever, but 80s, goldenageofcomedy.com. And what I do when I interview them, if they mention an act or a comedian or anything at all, I put a picture of that comedian that they're talking about. And sometimes I'm putting 40, 50 pictures up during an interview. So it's quite an extensive process even after we do the raw interview. So it takes me, you know, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 days to get a show out. But I'm averaging about 2 or 3 a week.
That's pretty cool. All right, it's my turn. I have, in a city like yours, Scott H. Silverman's Happy Hour, and, of course, Coast to Coast Power Hour. The In a City Like Yours is a true storytelling podcast that I asked my guests to come on and relate a story that has happened to them sometime in their life that has changed them in a good way or a bad way, and we discuss their artistic endeavors as well. And then Scott H. Silverman's Happy Hour is I co-host with Scott H. Silverman, who is a recovery crisis coach, and we talk about the realm of alcoholism and drug addiction and recovery. And the Coast to Coast Power Hour that you're listening to now is based on podcasters from the SJ Network, Steve Joyner. You can reach him at s-j-network.com. Steve Joyner, if you need a publicist basically he's a publicist. So if you need a publicist, if you're a podcaster and you're looking for guests, if you're an actor or a writer or a musician and you need a publicist, you know, check him out. So anyway, we get together and once a month we kind of have a 1 hour long show with as many podcasters from the network as we can get, and we discuss different topics. So tonight what we're going to discuss is the importance of cross promotion, which was suggested by William Wally, who is Wise, William Ontario, who suggested that we talk about the importance of cross promotion, but he's not here tonight yet. Hopefully he'll pop in. And then we're going to talk about our favorite TV sitcom. So anybody want to jump in and start us off with, you know, why you think cross promotion is such a big thing and such an important thing in podcasting?
It is an important thing because you get a chance to share what you're doing with others. You can come up with a great episode that's, you know, fun and entertaining to listen to if you have a lot in common with that other host, but it really does get a chance to, you know, get exposure to new audiences that way, especially when it's people that are like in a similar vein. You know, I mean, I don't know how well it would work if I had somebody on who was like a chef, but, you know, somebody who is interested in the types of things I talk about, you know, to kind of expand upon the things I get into, it can be very helpful and help grow your audience.
Yeah. Has anybody had really a noticeable difference after they've appeared on a podcast in their numbers?
Sometimes.
Matt, how about you?
The biggest jump I've seen ever was after I had a guy on my show that does the flat earth stuff. That was pretty interesting. Not only the interview, but I mean, the bump afterwards was like, what the hell? All right, so this is what you guys are all into. You want me to talk about weird shit like NASA redlining people and shit? Like, nah, good. One episode was enough. One episode was enough. But I mean, the bump was good. I'm grateful for that. It was a fun conversation. That was fun.
Yeah, I have a problem because I don't like doing interviews myself. I mean, I like doing interviews with others, but I don't like being on shows. So I have kind of a problem with going on shows, but I've been trying to go on more, you know, as many as I can and, you know, see how it works out. But I tend to shy away from talking about myself, you know, and going and but, you know, it really is important to promote your show. I know that, you know, we do a lot of stuff on social media as promotion. But you really get a, excuse me, you really get a bump, like Matt said, you know, when you go on a show that has maybe viewers that are, would be interested in what you're doing in your podcast. So it's a good thing to do. And, you know, I would highly suggest that if you're a podcaster out there to reach out to other podcasters and invite them on your show, and hopefully they'll do the same for you in return. And that way you can kind of do the cross promotion and maybe benefit both of you. What about you, Wally?
I know one thing I've experienced, especially as a guest on somebody else's show, is because I jumped into podcasting as unprepared as a human being possibly could be. I didn't do anything right when I first started. I just jumped in with both feet, and I've had to learn on the fly, you know, things that I need to do, ways to prepare, all that type of stuff. And I know it's just refreshing to be able to go on somebody else's show and just sit and talk and not worry about, you know, it's not running through my mind that we're at the 27th minute of a 30-minute interview kind of deal. And I'm a very conversationally driven individual. So when I get started with somebody, I always have to worry on my show when we get started. I hate to cut a guest off, but, you know, sometimes I had to kind of route them back up on the road because we kind of get off in the ditch. And I know when I go on somebody else's show, you know, they tell me ahead of time, hey, look, we're going to try to keep it to a certain, like I went on one not long ago, a guy out of New York, and he's like, dude, I do 27 to 30 minutes. I said, we won't even get started with 27 minutes. So, but we did keep it within about 35 minutes, and he was super excited. And it was just every experience is different. I guess that's that's what's impressed me the most about being going on other people's shows, is because I get a chance to talk about stuff that I find out that myself and the person hosting me, you know, we have some type of commonality before the conversation's over. And like I said, you know, I'm just no country boy from Mississippi. I mean, I'd have never had an opportunity to meet a lot of you guys if it wouldn't have been for podcasting. So it's all about expanding the horizons also. So.
Yeah, Bruce, you're new to the group with Steve Joyner. And you're kind of the people who are new to the group tend to have a slew of guest appearances on all his podcaster show. So how has that been for you? Because I know you've done, you know, probably about five or more in the past couple of weeks, haven't you?
Yes, it's been very interesting, because when you go from being the interviewer to the one being interviewed, it's very different. It's enjoyable because you get to talk about yourself. And when I talk about myself, it's talking about my history with the comedians. But I'm, you know, the reason I joined up with you guys and with Steven is I want a lot more people to be able to access these interviews because they're funny. The interview I just did with, I'm editing the one I just did with Murray Langston, the unknown comic. He has me cracking up the whole interview. He is so funny. I could barely get to ask any questions because I could barely catch my breath from all the laughing.
He is a scream.
He is just incredible. And I know that the world needs not just to laugh, but to really lose themselves and forget where they are and you know, just watch funny people and learn about their stories. You know, a lot of these guys, none of them have worked in the last year. I mean, think about it. Some people might be able to get other jobs when you're younger, but these guys are all in their 50s and their 60s, and some of them haven't worked in a year now. And not all of them, but some of them. So it's, you learn a lot about the intimate side of their lives. And also I feel like I've gotten very close again to a lot of the comedians that I've had on the show, learning their stories.
Well, we still haven't got the other guests come on, so we may not be getting any more podcasters. So let's go ahead and move into the topic of our favorite sitcoms. And I'm very interested to see, since Matt's our token comedian here tonight, what he finds the funniest in TV sitcoms, or if he finds any TV sitcoms to be worthy of his attention.
I mean, I liked Seinfeld whenever it was out. That was really good. I mean, Kramer is probably one of my favorite TV characters ever. But I'm I'm not a sitcom person.
Yeah, I tend to, what the two sitcoms I could think of that I liked the most were British sitcoms, Absolutely Fabulous and Fawlty Towers. Yep. And of course, I love Monty Python.
I don't consider, see, even the British stuff I like, which, you know, Fawlty Towers, you bring them up, that's good. But, you know, The Flying Circus, oh my God, that was so much better. But that was sketch. Like, that's what I watched a lot whenever I was younger, was like Flying Circus. I watched Kids in the Hall a lot, the old Saturday Night Lives, not like the weird stuff, but, you know, the like Belushi's and the super old goodness that existed. The 80s run of Saturday Night Live was amazing.
Yeah, we used to gather on Saturday nights and get totally wasted, you know, drinking quite a bit and smoking pot and watching Saturday Night Live, and was just blown away by it in the 80s because it was so unusual what was going on with them. But like you said, they're not really a sitcom. They're more of a variety show or a situation. I mean, I don't know. What did you call it?
Sketch.
Sketch comedy, yeah. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed Saturday Night Live, you know, during the beginning. I haven't watched it in years now. I mean, because they rotate.
Kids in the Hall is coming back.
Oh, well, that's cool. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Oh, I love the Kids in the Hall.
Oh, dude, it was so good. So good.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the Kids in the Hall had the chicken, or was that Saturday Night Live?
It was Kids in the Hall.
Chicken Lady. That was hilarious. And who did the Church Lady? Was that Kids in the Hall as well?
No, that was Saturday Night Live. That was Dana Carvey.
Yeah. So there are some aspects that are just really hilarious that I think would make, you know, funny sitcoms altogether, you know, if they broke off into their own little realm. But I guess you can only see Chicken Lady have an orgasm on a toy ride is, you know, once or twice a week, you know, or once a week for a month would probably get old. But yeah, that was classic.
Your head. Yeah. I'm squishing your head. That shit was amazing when I saw that. I was like, yeah, I can do that to other people and they'll never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Michael?
Oh, I've got a whole list of ones that I used to love. Starting back with the Dick Van Dyke Show, that just gold on that show. The writing was just incredible. The producers and the talent on that show was just second to none. Andy Griffith, Gilligan's Island, getting into the, you know, 60s there. And then also when, you know, things really changed with sitcoms, if you, you know, you've noticed, things went from being just, you know, just kind of like a comedy situations to finding the comedy in things that were just so harsh and real. And the things that I'm talking about was, if you remember, or even if you know, a little bit of, you know, sitcom history, the 60s, you know, they had, you know, the Green Acres, they had Gomer Pyle, they had Andy Griffith, Mayberry RFD. And then there was like an abrupt halt from that. And it kind of went from where they got off of the farm and kind of went into, you know, things like All in the Family.
How'd I know you were going to say that? I was just feeling the setup.
Yeah,
the whole All in the Family. I'm like, oh, he's going to say All in the Family. I didn't know that show. That shit was amazing. So was, Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son. But if you look at this, you know, you went from think about this for a second here, and I don't know, maybe Bruce, you could probably elaborate, since I'm sure you know a lot of these people that were behind a lot of these shows. Okay, we went from, you know, the farm, and then we kind of went to New York, All in the Family, Barney Miller, situations that they were in on those shows were not always the most pleasant. You know, it was a little more deep than Aunt B in a pickle contest, you know. You know, they kind of addressed the things like people in New York City at the police station being mentally ill, shootings, All in the Family. You know, they talked, there was a lot about hate and prejudice and a lot of, you know, very, very controversial social issues. And truthfully, I know just from knowing showbiz history, All in the Family almost didn't survive the first episode.
No.
You know, but they went for it at that point, you know. I mean, how long was Gomer Pyle in the Marines in the 60s and the word Vietnam wasn't even mentioned on that show? You know, just a lot of change during those years. And then also after that, you know, I really liked Police Squad. If that was the Zucker and Abrams folks that did Airplane, that was kind of like the precursor to the Naked Gun movies. Mary Tyler Moore, Faulty Towers. There are a number of British sitcoms that I like too. And then of course, you know, Seinfeld, Frasier, Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm a huge Office fan. And I have to say, and I may be a little bit biased, on Netflix, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. like I mentioned before, Three's Company, you know, even Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, I used to love growing up too.
Stealing my thunder.
Oh, well, I'll jump off of that thunder now, and I'll let you give a little more detail and get into depth on those. But those are mine. That's kind of the stuff that I always liked. And of course, MASH too.
Let me ask you, Michael, do you have a favorite Dick Van Dyke episode? Because when I think of Dick Van Dyke, I used to watch that when I was in college, and I'd get out of class, and it was came on at lunchtime, so I'd have my lunch and watch Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore back to back. But the Dick Van Dyke show that really got to me was the dream sequence episode with the walnuts in the closet and the eyes in the back of his head. That was, you know, that just sticks with me, saying, you know, probably for me, the classic Dick Van Dyke. Do you have any moments that you can really pinpoint from any of those shows you mentioned?
Well, the thing that I really liked about a lot of those, like Dick Van Dyke, Andy Griffith, Gilligan's Island, was that, and even, you know, getting into Barney Miller and a lot of these other ones, I love the character actors from those eras. The Vito Scotties, what's his name? Howard, Ernest T. Bass, Howard Morris. Oh,
yeah.
You know, Howard Morris. And then, I'm drawing blanks right now, but you know what I mean? You've heard the term that guy before, you know, Bernie Capel. Let me see. Oh gosh. So many of them would come up and the guy, J. Pat O'Malley was another one, that used to show up a lot. So many of them, I just used to really enjoy the character actors that used to show up. I mean, Vito Scotti was all over the place back then, and they always did great characters. They had such a range of different characters and different people they could do, you know, disguises they would wear and prosthetics, and they could do just about any, you know, non-main character that you threw at them. And that's something I really enjoyed about those shows. My favorite episode of Dick Van Dyke, I think, was actually the one with Vito Scotti when he came over and was supposed to paint the house, and it took forever for it to happen. and there was a number of other ones too, with, you know, Rose Marie was awesome on that. You know, Mari Amsterdam and, Richard Deacon, and Carl Reiner with his appearances on there too, were just wonderful.
Yeah. When I think of, Gilligan's Island, the episode that really sticks out for me is the episode with the irradiated seeds that they get, and it grows all the vegetables that are huge and lush, mm-hmm. and they're so happy, and then they realize they're poisoned by the irradiation. But that one and the large spider with Gilligan going into the cave and, you know, fighting the large spider, which was, you know, because that was kind of a combination between Sunday matinee horror and mm-hmm. sitcom. So,
and who can forget Wrong Way Feldman?
Yeah,
we did.
well, Bruce, why don't you go ahead and take over and let us know about what you find most interesting in sitcoms?
Whatever Michael said.
Well, you're not going to talk about it, huh?
Oh, okay. All right. I will talk a little bit about it. You know, some of the shows that I really, the test of time for me is if I can keep watching them after they've been out, if I can watch them 10 years later, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. And for me, certainly Seinfeld is that way. And another show that I love that they did a redo a couple of years ago was Mad About You. Mm-hmm. Love that show with some great, great talent, Paul Reiser, and just great talent on that show. One of the shows that nobody has mentioned, thank you, Michael, for giving me one show that you didn't mention is, you guys are taking me seriously, Dream On with Brian Benben.
Yes, Wendy Malick, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It wasn't a typical sitcom, and not everybody saw it because it was on HBO, but it was my favorite show. I just absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. And you brought up All in the Family, gritty New York, breaking all the ceilings, breaking all the rules. What an incredible show that really opened up things in America. It was really interesting. And Barney Miller, you know, another police story that you talked about. But here's another really big time favorite show of mine. I love Barry Sanders. Larry Sanders.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that takeoff of the Carson show. Oh, I just love that show. Gary Shandling, incredible. I love Frasier because I've been a talk radio and TV host since 93, so I loved watching Frasier. And another key contributor to the sitcom world was Gary Marshall.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you mentioned, Michael, of course, you mentioned Laverne and Shirley, but Happy Days was just an incredible breakthrough show. And those are really the shows that I really love watching. And, you know, if I came across it now, I'd have a hard time passing it by if I saw it on TV now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Happy Days was based on the movie American Graffiti. Right. Was Gary Marshall involved in the movie?
I believe he was. Mm-hmm. Gary Marshall changed television forever. The biggest shows on the air were all on NBC and CBS. And Gary Marshall got a deal at ABC and just changed everything.
Well, those of you who are old enough to remember when it was only three stations, three networks, do you find it was better back then when you had maybe a more of a limited choice to watch, so you had to watch something, than it is today when you have such a buku of, so many stations with Netflix and Prime, and everybody's doing, you know, their own shows now, and so the networks have just expanded. 20-30 networks that have Prime, really nice episodes and shows that are real quality. Do you find it that it was better back in the day when it was just limited, because you were forced to pick and choose from a few, and you kind of got into the gist of what the episode, the comic was about, the sitcom was about back then?
If you're asking me, it depends on who you are. If you're an audience, you had a very limited choices. But now, you know, I am so impressed with what I'm seeing. I don't like to promote Prime because I don't really like their, let's just say, their politics. But the amazing things that you can find on Prime, the amazing things that you can find on those cable channels. Granted, if there was 10,000 channels, you wouldn't watch 990 of them. Mm-hmm. But there's still some, even you can watch Evening at the Improv even now, even though they shot that show 40 years ago. You can still see the original Evening at the Improv's now on, I believe, Prime.
Yeah, some new sitcoms that I haven't watched yet that I really want to. One being Fleabag. Has anybody watched that?
I have. I have. It wore me out after four or five shows because it was, for me, I don't really like watching negative stuff. And she was always saying not nice things under her breath. And, you know, that's just me. I want to watch positive television, but I have seen it. I liked it for the first few shows. And I'd be interesting to hear if anybody else has seen it.
Anybody?
Not me. No,
I don't get a chance to watch a whole lot of TV anymore.
Well, William, what do you remember from back in the day and that you maybe watch today?
Well, one question you just asked a question I wanted to hit on about was it a better thing when you had fewer options? I remember being a kid growing up and I was a three channel kid. You know, I remember when we stumbled across, you know, Fox for the first time. I remember what a big deal that was. I remember stumbling across PBS back when I was a young guy on the old UHF dial, and I thought I'd hit, like, you know, it was weird because I thought I'd hit somewhere in Europe or something, because I think the first episode I watched on PBS was like Doctor Who, and they were all English actors, and I'm like, what in the world have I stumbled across here? But it was more of a priority then because you prioritized your time around your viewing. Like, for example, there were certain nights that I watched certain television shows, and there was nothing that was going to stand in the way of that. Shows like The Dukes of Hazzard. I never missed The Dukes of Hazzard episode when I was a young guy, and as I got older, and it, you know, those type shows faded away. One thing I did notice, though, and y'all were talking about All in the Family, I remember watching a lot of some of the shows that these guys were talking about earlier. I remember catching them in reruns, like, for example, Gilligan's Island, for example. I've watched every episode of Gilligan's Island probably a dozen times a piece, but it was all rerun type stuff. Shows that I grew up on, you know, comedy type stuff, you saw a real shift in the stuff that I kind of gravitated to, especially in the late 70s and early 80s. Because I was, like I said, I'm from a small town in Mississippi, and the television viewing shifted with the demographic of the nation at that point, because we were moving away from a real agrarian society and we were moving more to an urban type setting. So of course the shows were going to shift with it. And one thing I noticed, but I didn't notice then because I was young and stupid. You go back and watch them now. They were able to infuse politics. They were able to infuse, you know, lifestyles and ways that people were living in certain areas of the country into these shows, and they mixed the comedy in with them. For example, a show like All in That Family was considered a racist show, you know, according to a lot of the critics of the time. But you have a show like The Jeffersons, for example, where he was doing the exact same thing, making the exact same type comments, but he wasn't racist because he was empowered, you know, because he was living in a penthouse. I don't remember how the exact song goes, but it's talking about moving on up to the east side. And look, I'm
to a deluxe apartment in the south.
I grew up on shows like Family Ties, for example, to where the Alex P. Keaton, the little quirks that he hit people with were hilarious. But then they also dealt with a lot of issues that were, I mean, serious content issues where they talked about drug abuse and the treatment of women. And I remember the biggest episode ever, I guess, All in the Family, when his wife was raped. You know, that was taboo for sure back then. But the way it was presented, it brought, you know, it opened doors for shows like MASH, for example. MASH, all time, that it's got to be all-time favorite show. I literally have watched every episode of MASH 100 times, seems like. But MASH was a show that took comedic components and plugged it into real-world situations. And that's what molded my generation. That's why I am the way I am, because I witnessed life through a small screen, but the TV we had, it, you know, was the size of a stereo system is today. It was, I remember the television taking up the whole corner of the room. That's how big it was. But that's how an old country boy like me was living vicariously, you know, through the television shows that I watched. So the sitcom, when I think of sitcom, There's two distinct types of sitcoms. Okay, there's absolutely what I consider sketch style comedy, like Matt was talking about, like stuff like the first generation of actors that went through Saturday Night Live, for example. That is by far the funniest decade of sketch comedy that's ever been put on television, compared to what has come past it. No slight against Matt and his generation of comics, but there's those guys and those ladies that I grew up watching. Those are the ones that molded my sick, twisted, retarded, you know, humor that I have now. So the term sitcom just it's funny to me, because yes, they presented situations, and yes, they had elements of comedy. I guess that made them a sitcom.
You know, you mentioned MASH and the seriousness of some sitcoms. What brings to mind for MASH was the last episode, the final episode, which was very moving. And I think they scored a record for the number of views for that episode when it aired. But yeah, what do you guys remember that? The with him riding on the bus the way out, and
that episode. I watched a documentary on that just last weekend. That episode is at one point the only show on television that exceeded those numbers was a Super Bowl, and then they held that record up on percentage of viewers per capita. They held that record up to just, I think, 6 or 8 years ago now. And that show's been off the air forever.
Yeah,
guys, one of the things that we might not realize is Steven has a client, Larry Hankin, and Larry's been on every single show that we've talked about.
That's yes, true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Ted Lang, of course, was on The Love Boat, and it's not a typically thought of sitcom, but it was, in a way, funny stuff. And Ted Lang is available, and I'm going to have him on the show next month. I look forward to that.
You were talking tomorrow.
I just got a chance to interview Jill Whelan that was on that show, and she was absolutely amazing.
I liked her in Airplane.
That's what I told her. I said my first memory really of her was in Airplane, and then she had to point out to me she was on The Love Boat first, and I said, yeah, but the one thing that sticks out in my mind was when you were on Airplane to start with.
Well, Matt, let me ask you something. If you were to start your own sitcom, if you're a producer and you want brainstorming, what would be the ideal sitcom for you today?
You know, it's funny because I was thinking about what is really my favorite sitcom the entire time. And I heard Fawlty Towers mentioned. Nobody mentioned Are You Being Served? Still, in my opinion, the all-time best sitcom ever, because it was the 70s when that originally aired, and it was not common British humor at all. I mean, that show was raunchy as fuck. You're just wow, Miss Peacock with her wonderful hair. I don't know, something like that. Something that's just, but that's my style in general, is a punch in the face. Yep. So
that show lasted a long time for a British show too.
Oh, man, I grew up watching that show. I still watch that show sometimes. That was actually going to originally be, I was going to remix the theme song to that show for my show's theme music. And then I didn't want to pay the license fees. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to do this other thing over here. But I loved that show.
I think the lead character for that just passed away. I can't think of her name or the character's name.
You're talking about Mrs. Slocum.
Slocum, yeah. So, unfortunately, she was on up there in age. I'm not sure if it was COVID or not, but yeah, she just last week.
Whenever the show was on, I mean, come on, man. Like, that woman was 60 years old, rocking purple hair. And she...
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Do we have anything else that we want to talk about? We've kind of pretty much covered TV sitcoms. You want to go into something a little bit more? Maybe some dramas that had moments of comedy, not actually a dramedy, but full out drama that did have some comic episodes.
The Sopranos.
Okay, we'll talk about that. I can't think of anything funny from The Sopranos.
Shit, there was all kinds of good funny stuff from that.
Yeah, there was. There was. There was. You know, the serious stuff on there, and then there was. You know, a couple of the guys were on there, like, you know, the Paulie Walnuts character. He was more of like a comic relief. Him and the Steven Van Zandt character.
Well, Coco Diaz.
Yeah,
was on that show. I mean, mm-hmm. he's straight up a comedian. That's the only reason he was there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those guys were always they were dealing with some pretty scary stuff on that show, but like sometimes when it came to, like, you know, pulling it off, those guys would find themselves in some pretty comedic situations sometimes. And so there was some funny stuff on that show, definitely.
Yeah, I just thought of something and it just slipped out of my mind, but let me see if I can get it back. Because we were talking about dramedies, or comic drama. Damn, what was it? Oh, well, somebody else jump in here while I'm thinking about this.
Dragnet. Web shit from like back in the day. Dude, I loved that whenever I was a kid. And then Tom Hanks, Dan Aykroyd came out with that movie. Oh, I love Dragnet so much. As far as like a drama where you're like on the edge of your seat and laughing the whole time, like it was perfect. It was perfect.
Well, I thought about it. It's Breaking Bad, which is what I was going to bring up. That, you know, that for me, that had some quite a bit of comedy to it.
Larry Hankin kind of a dry had a role in that show as well.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Larry has just been in everything. He's one of those characters that you look at and you think, you know, I've seen him on something. And you realize you've seen him on everything.
Well, we spent time talking about his role in Seinfeld because he originally auditions for the role of Kramer. They give it to Dude, and then they're like, "Hey, we're gonna do this like weird thing. You want to be Kramer for a couple episodes?" And he was like, "Yeah, fuck it." But he was already the neighbor that had the cat.
Mm-hmm.
So Larry's awesome. And
I interviewed him too. He was a great interview. Told me a lot about John Candy, his relationship with him too. And they really got along well.
Canadian Bacon is a very underrated movie.
Yep. How about, he was telling me about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles too, where the Doobie, the cab driver scene. I don't know if you guys had him on too, but one thing he told me that was very interesting was that was only like a couple minutes and they were driving through the night in Kansas to get to this little motel. They ended up filming that all day and that director had the three of them improvise all day. And he ended up making a separate movie out of that was only shown at his house during a party. The footage is out there and it was like an hour long thing of Steve Martin, Larry Hankin and John Candy improvising during that cab ride. And it was only shown once. It was never shown publicly, but it was shown during a party. I'd love to see it,
man. Yeah, I would too. That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love me some Steve Martin, man. He was fucking Rupert. From Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Yeah, that was such a good movie with Michael. Who is the
Kane.
Guy? Yeah, Michael Caine.
Well, let's talk about our favorite comedians that turned sitcom stars, like Robin Williams. I can think of with Mork and Mindy, but you know, there's been several stand up comedians who branched over into sitcoms.
Sure.
Anybody got any favorites?
Andy Griffith. If he had some really good stand-up material back in the 50s and 60s. And of course,
singer too.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, of course, King of Queens and Everybody Loves Raymond. Those are two, you know, Ray Romano and Kevin James.
Joan Rivers.
And Paul Reiser was on Mad About You.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan.
And I can tell you guys an interesting story. When I was hanging around the improv many a night before Seinfeld became Seinfeld, Mm-hmm. All those guys would be sitting around either before their spot or after their spot. And we always talked about doing a show about comedians, you know, just doing nothing. And just like backstage, what it would be like to have a sitcom with the comedians, not on stage, but what they did backstage or after the show or during the day. And then a few years later, he did Seinfeld.
Interesting. Interesting. Let me see another one. Yeah, this was very short lived, but this guy was like one of my all time favorite comedians, Kevin Meaney and Uncle Buck. You guys
have seen that. I don't remember that. That was another John Candy, wasn't it? Or,
John Candy played the movie part, but Kevin Meaney played him on the sitcom. And I don't think it lasted more than a season or two, but Kevin Meaney was freaking hilarious. Bruce, did you see him back in the clubs in those days in the 80s?
No, I just missed him. I didn't see him.
Okay. Okay.
Well, we've pretty much exhausted our topic. So why don't we go ahead and call it a night? It's about 45 to 50 minutes that we've recorded so far. So that's a good episode. Anybody want to have any final thoughts that you want to share before we say goodnight?
Well, you can find all my antics at albinorhino.me. And soon, the website internationaltigerpenis.com will also point you there. I own it. I just haven't made it redirect. Man, I am right now. It's called Yingling. It's a nice amber lager from America's oldest brewery. Shit's made out of tap water, puts hair on your chest and makes you fart real bad.
Oh, goodness.
And if people want to hear all the inside stories about all the top comedians in the 80s, 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 goldenageofcomedy.com. Mm-hmm. They'll really enjoy it.
And if I could say, Bruce, I've listened. I've listened to probably half a dozen of your shows. I got to tell you, they are well done. If anybody wants to, you know, endorse Bruce's podcast, I do.
Thank you.
A wonderful job. And I mean, these were the people I was watching on TV when I was a teenager. I was growing up in the 80s. Those were my high school and early college years. And so many things, you've brought back so many memories just listening to these people talk. It's an amazing thing you're doing, Bruce. Keep it up, pal.
Well, I really appreciate it. And if you want to go to my Facebook site and put that in writing, what you just said, I can't remember it, but if you want to put that in writing, I'd really appreciate it.
Gladly.
Okay, gang, everybody say goodnight and we'll end the show.
Good night.
Good night,
everybody. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Okay, bye-bye.